And it feels like many Americans are angry. Donald Trump wants to ban Muslims. Militants in Oregon want to seize federal land. There's a debate over whether Ted Cruz, born to an American in Canada, is a natural-born citizen, over whether the Dreamers, people brought to the U.S. as children by illegal immigrants, should now be deported. Well, our next guest says this isn't new, that despite the Statue of Liberty and that give me your tired, you're poor, that our melting pot image of ourselves wasn't always that way, that the people who settled 17th century New England pulled up the gangplank behind them. The exceptionalism that propelled them was based on prejudice. Now, we know about the roundup of the Japanese during World War II, about the Chinese Exclusionary Act, Chinese shut out for half a century because they took too many jobs. We know about the Irish need not apply signs in Boston. But Stacy's book is titled Witches, Salem, 1692. Yes, the Salem witches are part of what she calls historic hatred. She wrote a recent op-ed in the New York Times and joins us from New York. And Stacy Schiff, you take us all the way back to the Puritans. Why?
Well, I guess I wanted to point out that the dual obsession with immigration on the one hand and terrorism on the other pretty much arrives on American shores with the Puritans. And if you look closely at any number of Puritan sermons, you begin to see a lot of hate-mongering, a lot of fear-inciting, and any number of discourses in which the word Indian, which of course is code word for you could be attacked at any moment, could be replaced with the word Catholic. This real sense that there are evils in the air and evils among us and that we are possibly prey to forces beyond our control.
Just define for us, who are the Puritans? Because they're not the same as the Pilgrims.
No, exactly. And I think most of us forget that. The Puritans come later, and they come very much with the idea that the Reformation is not complete and that they intend to strip their brand of Protestantism down to its basics. Because of that, they are all the more disapproving of any other sect because they have this commitment to purity.
By the way, what happened to the Puritans? I mean, how'd they fall from favor?
They exist today as the Congregationalists, but obviously in a very different form. I think it's very difficult to practice a religion that is as stripped down as was 17th century Puritanism.
Wow, and heavens, the Congregationalists I know are some of the most progressive people.
when you look at these sermons, this is a form of religion that requires so much. It's such an exacting religion. You live with an uncertainty.
Well, you cite Cotton Mather, who denounced others from the pulpit.
It's not a particularly embracing language. It's not the language that we expect of the other set of founding fathers, the inclusive 18th century founding fathers. It's really a sense that we are the pure, and moreover, we are the pure and we are the exceptional. You really see the roots of American exceptionalism in these sermons. But that we are the pure, and for us to be pure, by definition, some other group needs to be impure, and that group and the threat of that group begin to play a tremendous role in much of what gets broadcast from the sermons in 17th century Massachusetts. And I should probably add that in 17th century New England, the broadcasting from the pulpit is the only broadcasting. There is no press.
Right. It might as well have been CNN.
Exactly. And so there was really only one channel. Everyone is quite literally on the same page in terms of the fears, in terms of the sense of it, the fear of invasion, and that sense that somehow they are being stalked on all sides, which was, moreover, very real in some ways.
Boy, Quakers didn't fare very well. He called them a leprous people. Their teachings as wholesome as the juice of toads.
That's one of my favorite quotes. Exactly.
I shouldn't laugh, but
and the indignity suffered by the Quakers. This is before the witchcraft. I mean, these are thought to be truly pernicious people who are in their own ways attempting to infiltrate Massachusetts is truly horrific, what these people endure.
Well, and just give us some of the examples of what happened to not just Quakers, but Anglicans, Catholics.
Yes, and I guess the worst indignity there, the Anglican church in Boston in the late 1680s is actually desecrated by the Puritans. It's not what we think of from our Puritan forefathers, is it? This idea that they could actually sort of shatter the windows and really daub mud all over this church. But that's precisely what happens.
Mud and other things.
Mud and other things, which we'd rather not attribute, exactly.
Priests were considered the radical Muslim clerics of their day?
any number of times you see these astonishing references. I mean, there really is no greater fear than that of Catholics, of priests. It's basically devil worship. And there are any number of Massachusetts children who are carried off by the Native Americans, by the Indians. And in captivity, they will encounter French Catholic priests. And given the choice between the two, between their Indian captors and the French Catholic priests, they are more trusting of the Indians than they are of these diabolical Frenchmen. Mm. So, yes, there is a real, and again, incited from the pulpit, a real fear that these people are, these other peoples are practicing devil worship of various kinds.
Mather warned, this is in, I think, 1690, you write, that New England was in a state of such distress and danger as it had never seen before. He forecast the imminent descent of whole armies of Indians and Gaelic bloodhounds. Those being the talk more about the feelings of the French.
Well, this is just at the beginning of the first real conflict with the French and Indians. So there is, and again, this is, you know, this is somewhat parallel to McCarthyism. There are communists. They just aren't perhaps as large a band as we suspect they might be. There is a threat here. There are people who wish New England ill. They are just not as numerous as some sermons might perhaps indicate. But we should also say that there's a great use for that kind of there's a great ecclesiastical mileage that you get out of those kinds of sermons by bulking up the enemy, by repeating how dangerous it is out there. You are filling the pews. And Cotton Mather is extremely clever about the use of these fears and about talking about the power of those dark words. There's a very dark power in those very dark words. And he's not immune to using this to his various ends.
Well, you said something that I want to pick up on, that there is a threat, you know, from Indians, from others, just not as big as they'd said. And I can hear people saying, wait a second, what's the parallel with today? Because there is a threat from radical Muslims, for instance. I mean, you know, the Baptists back in the 1600s were no threat. But today, ISIS is. You know, they are stating that they want to take down America. So doesn't that make it slightly different from that historic kind of making someone the other to make yourself bigger?
It comes down more to the overstated threat. As we know, in 1692, Americans begin to see, or New Englanders begin to see things that aren't there. They begin to see witches in the air. But what they're really afraid of, and what comes out very often in the court testimony, are Indian raids. Any number of people will turn up in court and talk about how they've had nightmares of being carried off by the Indians. That threat, of course, is real. So what it is this this need to kind of fire recklessly at the wrong enemy, or to overstate the case of the enemy at hand.
And literally make yourself crazy. I mean, that's an interesting thought, because the Salem witch trials came after decades of this fear-mongering. And are you saying that it literally made people, or as you write, grown men watch neighbors fly through the streets? They really thought that these people were witches.
There is truly at this point a sense that some kind of diabolical conspiracy is at work. And I think that, you know, is staggeringly parallel to some of the things we hear today when we hear that America is at war in a presidential debate, for example. But that sense that there's a conspiracy, but no one's entirely sure of who it is exactly who means to subvert the state. And by 1692, not only have they begun to see witches and wizards in Massachusetts, but they've begun to see phantom Frenchmen and Indians as well. There's this terrific outbreak in Gloucester where they feel they're firing at forces who then vanish into the air as they fire on them. So there really is this sense that they feel they've been so much under assault that they begin to see specters in the air. And so, yes, you could argue that they've made themselves crazy with their fear.
Well, it carries on throughout the country's history. We listed some of the other moments. You could add Italians when immigrants first came in numbers. What are you saying, though? Are you saying, oh, this is just like every other moment in history? I mean, is this with us?
I think there's a strain of this, that sense of conspiracy that's very much in our national makeup. I think there is a piece of the DNA that we inherit directly from the Puritans, where sanctimony plays a terrific role, where that feeling that we are somehow under siege, that frontier mentality, and that we might be invaded at any time or subverted at any time. Those are real legacies from the Puritan years, certainly, that the imagined enemies at home might be as much a menace to us as the real enemies abroad. I think those ideas were very much bred over the 17th century, yes.
Well, then the tricky part is, as we saw in, for instance, San Bernardino, there's a grain of truth.
And the need to remember that it's but a grain and not somehow elevate it to a mountain to keep the emotional in check rationally is extreme, because you can see where these things can lead, especially in a situation where there are no checks and balances on the system.
That's Stacy Schiff, author of The Witches, Salem, 1692, with a look at the history of hatred, anger in America. Stacy, thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
And all day we've been remembering David Bowie, who died at 69. This is Not America, written with Pat Metheny for the film The Falcon and the Snowman. It's Here and Now.